And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Front and Nationwide. This is The Athletic's dedicated Blue Jackets podcast. Aaron Portzone with you on a Wednesday afternoon, the eve of the 2023-24 season opener for the Blue Jackets. Adam Fantilli's NHL debut. We've got Severson and Provorov's Blue Jackets debut. Alexander Texier's return to Columbus. Lots of things to see that are new and fancy tomorrow. It sure looks like Kent Johnson and Liam Foudy will be the healthy scratches tomorrow. Looks like Adam Boqvist is the extra guy on defense. I'm going to get my headphone set in here so it sounds a little bit better for you. We can talk about all those things. We can talk about whatever you want to talk about. You can step up to the stage and ask a question, or you can leave a question or a comment on the text field, and we'll try to get to as many as we can. We can talk Pascal Vincent. There's a story on the site today about Pascal and his past today. The people who love and admire him most. So have at it. And let me know what you all are thinking. I think we'll probably go for about 45 minutes today. That is the plan. So let's get going on this here. We got a bunch of texts. We've got we got Jonathan B on stage. We'll get to Jonathan in just a second. Jonathan, be ready to go. Ron J says he's first in the queue. He says, I must confess my bold CBJ prediction was not Kent Johnson eating popcorn on opening night. I wouldn't have gone with that either. I don't think it's maybe quite the big deal. If you remember, I think he was a healthy scratch on opening night last year. And Pascal Vincent explained it yesterday while also couching it by saying that he hasn't decided yet on the healthy scratches. That really isn't a complaint about Johnson's camp. He was fine. It's more just a desire to have a more direct north and south lineup together on Thursday. Now, you can look at some other players that maybe aren't north and south players either and question that, but Kent Johnson's going to be fine. He's going to play a ton of games this year, but it is a curious decision. I think Joe S. has that same question. Hopefully that addressed it. Ryan C. says, can you confirm that the team has been looking to move out a defenseman in recent weeks? In parentheses, days. Well, Ryan, I wouldn't even limit that to recent weeks and days. I think it's intensified since rosters were settled and everybody has a more keen grasp of what they've got and or what they don't have. But Jarmo Kekalainen has been trying to trade a defenseman for quite a while. I think he's willing to move a forward too. We published a piece on the Athletic website yesterday afternoon that if you look at the situation, Columbus has what a lot of teams tend to typically want. I'm not saying that these specific players are in high demand around the league, but there's usually a demand for right shot defensemen, and the Blue Jackets have a ton of them. The thought is that they don't want Juracek to spend the whole season in Cleveland, that he has earned a spot in Columbus with his play in camp, that he's ready to go. But they need something to do with Boqvist, Peak, They sent Blankenberg down. Both Boqvist and Peak would need to clear waivers. They could lose them for nothing. They'd rather trade them, obviously. So Boqvist is probably the one, given his skill set, that would have a higher return. That's more of a rare type player, an offensive defenseman. He's got pretty good numbers for, I think, in 95 games with Columbus, he's got, I don't even want to guess, but I wrote it down. I can't remember it, but he's been a pretty productive offensive player when he's in the lineup. That's another concern, is he's not been in the lineup a lot. He's been injured quite a bit. Peak is a totally different player, stay-at-home guy. Probably the market for him is a little less, because those guys are seen fairly or not as, I don't want to say a dime a dozen, but certainly they proliferate the league more than skilled defensemen do, even today. So yeah, they're working on it. I'm not sure he's going to get it done. You'd certainly like to have gotten it done yesterday if you're going to do it before opening night. But if the deal is right, you take it. All right, let's do Chantel, and then we're going to hop over to the stage. Chantel says, what are the chances CBJ may be interested in Shane Pinto with all the cap issues the Senators have? Now, Chantel, I'm sure you didn't do this. I'm sure it's autocorrect, but I like that it changed his last name to Pinot, as in Pinot Noir. I don't know that. So the Blue Jackets are, I'm not saying they're out of Pinto. I'm not saying they don't have an interest in him. I'm not sure how they feel about him. But the trade they're looking to make is a player going out and not a player coming in. They've got too many guys is the issue. So there could be two guys going out and one guy coming in. That would help. I don't get the sense that Pinto is part of the Blue Jackets' pursuit in all of this. But time will tell. And they make it a point to not tell me what they're doing. So let's go now to Jonathan B. Jonathan B., you are on Front End Nationwide. You are on stage. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Porty. Thank you very much. Best to you. Best to your health.
Thanks, buddy.
Wanted to just kind of talk a little bit more about the moving out of defensemen or trying to, you know, pare down the roster. I think you've already addressed it pretty well, but I'm already starting to temper expectations on what Jarmo could reasonably get back for any of the players that's kind of been bandied about, especially with the roster limitations we have. But do you have in mind what kind of a package he could be looking for? Because I was just kind of thinking who else is available, who's trying to be moved. And some people were talking about Connor Garland from Vancouver, and that makes negative sense to me, given that he makes $5 million a year for the next 3 years and is a middle six winger. But Right. Are the only things I'm kind of seeing the Jackets have a true burning desire for would be, you know, a stable goaltender, or maybe a goaltending prospect. But I just wondered if you could elaborate on what kind of a package you think Jarmo could be looking for in return for any of the pieces we're trying to move out.
Yeah, so if he's moving a defenseman out, to me, the obvious return is a prospect or a pick, somebody who doesn't need a roster spot right now. Because, again, that's what this is about. This is about clearing guys out. It's something I feel a little strange saying it, because it sure does sound to some people like you're saying, geez, the Columbus Blue Jackets are just too loaded with great NHL players. They can't fit them all on the roster. That's really not the case. They have a promising future. They've got an interesting mix of veterans and promising young guys. But they have a lot of players that are seen, at least to them, as NHL-type players. It's crowded. Contracts are guaranteed. I keep seeing in the contract field, get rid of Bean. Well, you can't just get rid of people. I think we should also consider this, everybody, that after what transpired on the days leading up to training camp, this might not be the best time if you're management to go to ownership and tell them you want to bury a contract in the minors. This might not be the time to go to management and tell them that you want to take on a bad contract to unload a player from your roster. I think that's got to be part of the consideration too. So yeah, if Peak moves or Boqvist moves, or if a forward moves, you know, what are they going to keep Foodie here all year? There can be injuries. They did it last year and they were rewarded for it. He played pretty well at the end of the season for, you know, whatever that season was. But they would be looking to clear space, which means it's not a player coming back, not a today player coming back anyways. So that's how I would answer that. Jonathan, thanks for the question. Let's go to Patrick D., who left on the text field. He said, I'm a little angry at the GM/coach saying that best players will make the team and determine the roster. Juracek was probably top 2D in camp and gets sent down. Thoughts? Well, I'll say this. Every year at the start of camp, they say contracts are not going to decide jobs. And let's just say then the deadline draws near. And the reality of losing a player for nothing becomes apparent. And in their defense, I think you have to consider certain things. I don't think it hurts David Juracek to go back to Cleveland. I think there's still some stuff he can work on. I think he was a really good player here in training camp. I thought he busted his butt and at times looked really good. He still has some sort of baby horse moments where his legs seem a little bit wobbly. He's not the most gracious skater, but I'm not sure he's ever going to be with his size and his frame. There's a lot to like about the player. But I don't mind him going to Cleveland for a month. And in their defense, you would hate to put him on the roster, waive somebody, and then a month into the season have 3 injuries and be looking for a body again. So I don't mind starting the season like this. I get it. If you say, maybe don't say it though. That's, I guess, my thing. Maybe don't promise that the decisions are going to be made by purely by performance, not by contracts. But I also think there are some examples in this camp of performance dictating. I would point you to Emil Bemström, who I know is, for many people, a frustrating player. He's had plenty of cracks, hasn't really grabbed it yet. Had a great camp and is rewarded. He's starting tomorrow night, at least starting in the top 6 with Texier and Jenner. The top line, by the way, is Gaudreau, Line A, Sillinger. So, yeah, that's an example of them rewarding a player. And, you know, Kent Johnson is a healthy scratch tonight because I think they like 12 guys better than him. So I think it's a mixed bag. Franz T says, I'm hoping that sitting KJ for a few games will have the same effect on him as Kyle Connor had after being sent down in his first season. He was fire when he returned to the lineup. I think the Blue Jackets would take it if you promised them that Kent Johnson would become Kyle Connor. Absolutely. I think they're different players. I think Johnson's more of a playmaker. Connor more of a shooter, but I love watching Kyle Connor play hockey. Hell of a player. Watched the Pens versus Hawks last night, and Bedard played 21-29. What should our expectations be for Fantilli, considering there's much more competition at center with CBJ? Are you thinking the 14-16-minute range? This is from William R. William, that's exactly what I'm thinking. And if you notice, if you look at the games that Fantilli played in the preseason, early on, he played 21 minutes. He played power play. He played penalty kill. In his second game, he did not play power play, but he played penalty kill. In his third and fourth game, he did not play either special team. As I can tell right now, I did not see the second power play unit today. I saw the first. I don't think he's on either power play unit. I think he's a 5-on-5 player. And again, he is on a third line with Danforth and Marchenko. I will urge you guys all know this. These lines are hardly set in stone. They're not even written in ink. Be prepared for these lines to change. And I think if you believe that Line A is your center, is a top 6 center, and Jenner is a top 6 center, you have a real comfortable opportunity to bring him in the right way. And you can create an opportunity where you don't put a leash on him, but you don't just let him run wild at the start. So let him earn everything he gets. That's how this kid is wired. Wait till you read some of the comments tomorrow about the people who sort of exist in Fantilli's orbit. We talked to a bunch of people around him to get their thoughts on him getting to this point and what they're going to see tomorrow night. Such an impressive young kid. He's going to take a lot this year. He's going to take a lot of ice from other players this year. And I suspect his role is going to increase as the season goes along. I keep getting asked what's a reasonable point total for him. I'm going with 22, 36, 58. And I might take the over.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Franz T says moving a D plus for a competent goalie would seem like a sound trade as well. That's a hell of an idea. Those are typically summer trades though, Franz. Most people aren't moving their top goalie right now, unless some team's got two and the second guy is ready for a big load. I'm sure Yarmo has investigated that already. Let's see if they can't get Elvis up to snuff here. Ryan C says, when young players, rookies, decide to live with a veteran player during the start of their career, does management have to okay who they stay with? I've always thought of Laine as a bit of a, quote, rock star type. A guy, all due respect, not like I actually know the guy personally. I was curious about Fantilli staying with him, but by all accounts, Laine has shown a lot of maturity lately. It's a great question, Ryan, and it's full of insights. Management really technically can't dictate that. Adam Fantilli is a 18, soon to be 19-year-old guy. He's a free citizen. He can live wherever the hell he wants. If the team did give him a hard time, I think he could certainly get the Players Association involved. He has the right to live where he wants. I was surprised that it was Laine. And now that I've sort of seen him in camp this year and seen how serious he is about playing center, how much more of a leader he seems like on this team, I think it's all part of a new version of Patrick Laine that we're starting to see. And I wrote a story about this about 10 days ago. He's changed. And I think he's only 25 years old. Sometimes when you're staring at the same thing, you don't see the changes. It's like the trees in your childhood neighborhood. You don't see them getting bigger until you go away for a couple of years and come back and it blows you away. It's your elementary gymnasium. It's huge when you're a little kid. You come back as an adult and you're like, what happened to the other third of it or half of it? That's a fascinating thing about growing up. I think we need to show a certain level of grace here that Laine can grow up as is typical for a 25-year-old. It just happens that he's been under the spotlight for so long. I think he feels like less of a rock star now. I think he's going to have a hell of a season. And I'm excited to see that because he hasn't put it all together in Columbus, either because of injuries. His first year was not good offensively, even when he was healthy. But he's had some moments, but he hasn't had that full year, certainly that we saw from him early in his time with Winnipeg. So maybe we have witnessed the real growing up of a player in our presence. Zigeth says, if the sports books, I think he means, have the CBJ at 72.5, what would be the points needed for Yarmo to keep his job? Wait, do the sportsbooks not have that betting option? I'd be surprised. I don't know. I don't think it has a hard number. And I also think there are various ways to 72.5 points, if you know what I mean. I have a feeling that the start of this season is going to be a little difficult for them because of so many things that are up in the air and need to be ironed out and figured out. And some of those things can only be figured out with time. Kent Johnson's going to play in this lineup. Of course he is. Is Laine a top center? Can Elvis put it back together again? There's a lot of ifs here. What if they start pretty choppy and then finish really strong? That changes the tenor of things. What if they have the injuries again this year that they did last year? That's hard to put that on the general manager. So there's lots of things, and we don't really know what the McConnells are thinking in order to say exactly what the number is. And if they have a number, I can't imagine they'd put it out there to let it hang over his head all year. Joe S. says, we've known the CBJ. We know the CBJ need to thin the rosters since the end of last year. Yarmo has been unable or unwilling to pull the trigger on a trade, and thus roster decisions were driven by contracts. Add that to his major asterisk up with hiring Babcock. Why should fans have any confidence in Yarmo? Well, Joe, I would say this. It takes two people to make a trade. And if you notice, there were not a ton of trades around the league this year. It's a very different situation right now. Normally, it would not be hard to move a right shot defenseman. Normally, those guys are I wouldn't say coveted, some of what the names we're talking about, but they are desired players. And this year, with so many, I think I looked at it yesterday, and according to Cap Friendly, 19 of the 32 teams are either within $1 million of the cap or are already over the cap. And most teams want to keep a buffer there for injuries throughout the season. $1 million is typically not enough. So that's how crowded it is. And anybody, if there are players who are interested in Roslovic and Boqvist in Peak, name your others. Their first order of business, many of them, is, okay, what are you taking back? And it's got to equal this money. And for the most part, if it's going to equal that money, it's going to include a today player. And so a one-for-one trade does no good for Yarmo Kekalainen. I think he's worked his butt off to make trades this summer. And he has found a virtual brick wall, just like so many other GMs, because of the finances in this league. It's starting to loosen up a little bit. I think most people expect the cap to go up next year. So maybe as the season moves on, it will get better. Easier. Jonathan C. says, where is Roslovic fitting in? As of right now, he is on the fourth line with Robinson and Kiraly. Not an ideal fit, and I think you could say that is the last stop on your own path to a healthy scratch if that doesn't get corrected. I'm not sure Johnson goes in right there if he plays Saturday, but I think Vincent is going to be, I'm going to say Pascal Leclerc a million times, by the way. I'm sure Pascal Vincent is looking hard to see what works on Thursday and what can be changed. But I expect the key word here is volatility. Volatility. Sean P. says, I must have missed it. What are the lines for opening night as you see them? Well, this is what I see per practice yesterday and today. This isn't my opinion. This is what the Blue Jackets are skating with. And it was left to right, the first line, Gaudreau, Line A, Sillinger. Second line, Texier, Jenner, Bemstrom. Third line, Danforth, Fantilli, and Marchenko. And fourth line, Robinson, Kiraly, and Roslovic, leaving Foudy and Johnson as the healthy scratches up front. On the back end, it's been Werenski with Peak, the two new guys, Provorov with Severson, and then the third pair of Bean and Gudbranson with a healthy scratch. Most likely, this one's not as clear to me as the forward was of Adam Boqvist. So there's your lines and pairs. Elvis, starter, of course. Spencer Martin, the backup. Philip W. says, can we please encourage the nickname Doc for our head coach? A piece you wrote was very insightful about Vincent and his backstory. Well, thanks, Philip. Yeah, Doc is fine. I like writing stories like that because there's so little known about Pascal Vincent. So that's an easy story to tell. It's all out there. Here's one you might think is interesting, too. The nickname for Adam Fantilli in the room is Mo. And you're probably scratching your head going, what the hell? What are they thinking? his given name, this is his father's name, you should know, is Giuliano Fantilli. Touch Italian. Adam's full name is Adamo, A-D-A-M-O, Adamo Giuliano Fantilli. Yes. And I think his grandmother was directly off the boat from Italy. So Adamo in the room, which I think he should just go freaking Adamo. Is that, I'm not sure I've heard a cooler name. I would go Adamo. Anyways, the players in the room call him Mo. Ryan C., your thoughts on preseason big hits like Ocean Fantilli or the Kings guy on Mark Stone, legal and legit or bad form? Well, to me, Ryan, I see those as two different hits. I thought the hit on Stone was dirty, late. I did not mind the hit on Fantilli. I get that it's preseason, but both players are getting ready. I loved Fantilli's explanation for it, if you saw it. He said the puck jumbled on me a little bit. I knew I had to get the puck in. I knew I was going to eat one. He made the conscious decision to take that hit to keep the puck in the zone. Full marks, young man. Full marks. And he got up. And he was fine. And he played in traffic after that and scored the game-winning goal. That is exactly what you want to see. The other thing you want to see is, I think both things can be true. Clean hit by Oshie. Not an appreciated hit, because that's our guy. That is our 18. If I'm Boone Jenner, I'm thinking that is our guy. That's our 18-year-old rookie, soon to be 19. And you got to drive the point home that that is not acceptable. And I thought they did that. I thought they did that well. Right there. Andrew N says, wonder if the experience of the games in Tampere last year and how dejected Laine seemed after that trip affected his offseason, lit a fire under him going into this season. Andrew, I don't know that for a fact because I've not asked him that question specifically. But I think the all of last year played into it. I think that the desire to play center has really ignited him. So, yeah, I think he is a motivated guy. And I'm not sure if you can go that far back and say that's where it started. I think all of it last year piled up into a, you know, geez, this is my eighth year in the NHL coming up, if you're Line A. And he's maybe recognizing now that even at 25, this goes by pretty fast. That's the wisdom of being an older person tells you how quickly it goes. Sometimes you don't recognize it when you're young. Maybe Line A's trying to pay heed to that. And I think we've seen a different player. Franz T says, the impression that I've got from Line A based on media reports, and Franz is from Finland, or at least he's a native Finnish speaker, he says, he seems a bit more mature and really motivated to show the rest of the league how he's not afraid to challenge the best centers in the league. Personally, I love his moxie that's lacking in this league compared to other pro sports. Franz, we were just saying today, a bunch of us talking about Line A, that there are few people in the league who are as direct and frank and plain-spoken as Line A is. It's refreshing sometimes. He's not the easiest interview because you never know where it's going, but you always walk away feeling like you got his feelings on the matter, clearly. So, yeah. I hope I addressed that to you. And thanks for joining us, Franz. Mallory says, can someone write out the lines? I will write them out if you want. I think we just verbalized them. I hope that's enough for now. Nico says, hey, Porty, what do you predict Marchenko's production will look like this year? Good question. It looks like he's going to get a pretty darn good opportunity. He was with Gaudreau and Laine earlier. He could be back there again. I'm going to put him at 25, 28, 53. I think he'll have more assists this year. Remember, if you want to leave a question, you can certainly leave us a text message. You can step up on the stage. That's been working really well, by the way. I know some of you don't like to hear yourself talk, but the technology has come a long way here for the Athletics. So it's a great way to have a conversation. We'll keep looking here. Ryan C. says, in regards to Babcock, oh, I thought we were past this. Is it at all possible he legitimately thought he was doing a well-intended attempt to get to know guys? Or was it a calculated abuse of power where nobody knows? Ryan, that's an interesting question that one has been that's been debated a bit. I guess my feelings are this, and you are free to disagree. By the time you're Mike Babcock's age, you need to know what a person you're dealing with is going to consider a calculated abuse of power. And I don't want to say that it's not up to Mike Babcock, but it's up to the people whose privacy he invaded to determine how they feel about that. And the fact that he didn't know he was overstepping his bounds is to me, A, not a defense, and B, even worse, because it's proof that he learned nothing from the stuff he stepped in Toronto and Detroit. I think it's also key to remember this. Not all of these interactions were the same. And so one player's experience fairly was, yes, I want to get to know more about your family. Send me some pictures or pick some pictures to put up here. For other players, it was completely different than that. It was, give me your cell phone. I want to see what you're all about. Some people have said he went through text messages. You can't do that. There are spouses that don't look at their phones like that. I mean, it can't be. So, I mean, your last part, nobody knows. He doesn't think he was doing anything wrong. We know that. We also know that the people who were on the other end of it thought he did something wrong. And the more the players in the room learned about what he did, they agreed that it was way out of line, and they agreed that this needed to be taken care of. So that's where I'm at with that. Austin H. says, what is your favorite thing about covering the Blue Jackets? Boy, that's a big one. You know, I think people who are writers are storytellers. They're at their heart, no matter what really a topic they write about. And so for me, like, even as a young kid growing up in the beautiful rolling hills and pastures of Mount Vernon, Ohio, I loved my first real exposure to sports. Not that I didn't know it existed, but the first time it moved me was when I was 9 years old watching the Miracle on Ice team. And obviously it was my first exposure to hockey. But more than that, it was my first exposure to how sports can transcend, how sports can move, how sports can transfix a country, how the seemingly impossible is sometimes possible in sports, and how sports is the original and still undefeated original form of reality TV, completely unscripted. A lot of times, it's not that damn interesting. The Blue Jackets have played a lot of games over the last 23 years that have been on the scale of interesting to not compelling at all, closer to the bottom there. That's a fair thing to say. But there are moments there. There have been moments in this building and elsewhere that are incredibly captivating, spine tingling, and it to me is a tremendous responsibility and a huge gift to be charged with describing that or getting behind the scenes with it and really fleshing it out. That's a huge honor, and I don't take it lightly. Marcus R. says, what are you most excited to see from the CBJ this season? What would define it? This is a successful season. You know what? I want to see Gaudreau and Line A fully realized. I want to see the young players bloom. I think Elvis Merzlikins has inside of him a good NHL goaltender. I'm curious whether he can find his way to make that reappear again. so much about this season is up in the air and exciting. I think there are good answers to the questions that they have. I don't think there's really any aspect of this team where you just look at it and go, good God. The defense should be dramatically better, and it's going to continue to get better as Juracek and Matejchuk get here. The forwards are extremely skilled, and that's only going to pick up more as Fantilli gets acclimated. Johnson finds a foothold. Dumais plays his way here. And more. I mean, it's a tough time right now to be preaching patience. But I do think they get a little bit of reset here with Vincent. And I do think people need to understand that the future really is legitimately bright here. This isn't waiting on Alexander Picard. These are some real dudes. Fantilli's a real dude. Patrick R. says, after Adamo was drafted, how quickly did the CBJ know he'd be a game one starter? I don't know about game one starter, but NHL player immediately is sort of the same as that. And it was really interesting at the draft. Jarmo Kekalainen stated clearly that he saw Adam Fantilli as an NHL player. And Fantilli, the way mature beyond his years, said, I'll talk to my people and see if going back to college isn't right for me. I don't think anybody thought he was going back to college, but this was the kid's mindset. He didn't want to be seen as just simply leaving Michigan high and dry. He wanted the first people to know that he was going to move on to be his coaches and his teammates. Full marks for that. And I find it distasteful when kids go to schools and do the thing at the table where they tease this program and that program and then finally throw their half to the side, put the other one on. I would never allow my kid to do that. Never. It would be, we are not going to throw those schools under the bus. Just put your freaking hat on. Tell people where you're going to school. And that was Fantilli's mindset. He didn't want anybody to think that he was bolting on Michigan the first opportunity. He loved his time in Michigan, and he wanted to handle it the right way. So, let's see, was that the question I had? Oh, yeah, that was the question. How is the goalie? This is from Kyle W. I think I skipped you. Sorry, Kyle. That was the confusion. How has the goalie coaching change impacted Elvis from what you've seen? Honestly, that is a very hard thing for me to judge. I think if you're a Blue Jackets fan, you are feeling a little bit better given the way that he played in Washington. That was by far his best game of the preseason. But that is a very technical position. He's gone from a very outward personality, Manny Legacy, to a very serious personality, Nick Backstrom. I think that's important. I think that's good. Nick Backstrom can show Elvis so much, but part of what he can show him is what it means to be a revered veteran goaltender. And I think that's as much a concern for them with Elvis as the on-ice stuff is the off-ice stuff. Not that he's a bad person, but you need a certain attitude and a certain projection from your number one goaltender. That position must project confidence, reliability, consistency. And those just aren't words you can put on Elvis right now. He's got to get there. That's part of being what a number one is. We've got Jonathan R. now in the queue. Jonathan, we're going to come to you in a second. Be ready for us. We'll get a couple more off the text field here. Tyler I. says, over under on NHL starts by Jet Greaves this season. I see where you're going there. I'll give you a half number so that you can safely wager a ridiculous amount of money on this, Tyler, but I'll say 8.5. You might be thinking that's low. I think with Martin here, with Tarasov coming back eventually, I think they're going to take their time with Jet Greaves, but we'll see. I'll say 8.5. Mark L. says, how is Chinnikov? He was out most of last year with an injury. Now he has a back injury. any concerns about having a chronic career-threatening injury. Well, I don't get the sense that this injury he's got is a career-threatening injury. No. It is a lower back injury. It's not good that he's hurt a lot. It suggests, you know, that there may be things he could do differently training if he's just getting hurt in practices. This wasn't a big hit from an opponent. This was training to get better. Yeah, it's got to be a concern. I mean, some guys are injury prone. I'm not saying he is that yet. He still has time to change it. But that has sidetracked his start a little bit. There's no question. I have no indication that what he's suffering right now has a possibility of being career-threatening, though, no. So, Joe S. says, who do you think the alternate captains will be? Good question, Joe. I think there's a lot of candidates. Do you go with the guy that doesn't need the A to be the A? In other words, could Branson, Corrali, those guys are probably going to be leaders no matter what is upon their chest. Are there guys you think have it in them to do more and you could give them a boost of confidence with the A? I think that's there. I don't know if they're going with two home and two road, or I just kind of like having a C and two A's, but they try to spread that out a little bit. But we'll see what they go with. I think there's a lot of choices here. Werenski, of course. Jenner's already the captain. But there's a lot of guys that would qualify as captain material, and I think you want to pick maybe a different voice sometimes, too. Maybe Danforth can use the A. Just a thought. All right, we're going to go to the stage. We've got Jonathan R. standing by. Jonathan, you are on Front and Nationwide. We got about 15 more minutes to go here. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, Porty. First off, just wanted to say real quick that before you said 8.5, that was the exact number in my mind as well. So I thought that was
creepy.
A funny coincidence.
You must
be a genius.
Yeah.
What can I say? Great minds. But I wanted to ask kind of for a little bit more of a behind the scenes question. When, like with Saravalli, like reporting the rumor, you know, that CBJ shopping a defenseman, not that that's a well-kept rumor, in my opinion, at this point. But with things like that, do you find that a lot of times rumors get out there because like the organization wants the rumor to start getting out there through unofficial channels, or like a player agent wants rumors out there through unofficial channels? Or is it more often like, you know, some guy at the rink that just kind of is a bit in the know or overhears things and kind of, you know, that's tends to be more of the sources of where those kinds of things come out. Just kind of curious, just it's just was interesting to me to think about how these guys often get their rumors, whether they're kind of unofficially official, or is it more just like heard it from a guy that might kind of be in the know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, a guy like Saravalli is, as a Nashville guy, has a obviously a reputation that he's built for years. So you wouldn't just hear it from a guy at the rink and go with it. I would not. Frank would not either, as well as I know Frank. But Frank also is a national writer with a national voice, so he speaks to a lot of people. And one of the conversations you have with people around the league is, what are you hearing out there? And people talk. Agents talk. And it can come from different sources that you wouldn't believe. I have been burned a few times by agents who, not burned as though I went with it and it was wrong, but if I had gone with it, it would have been wrong. Trying to paint their client in a better light. So you have to be very careful. And there are things that you sit on, I sit on, that are plenty juicy, but haven't really crossed the threshold of being completely verified and known to be true. And I'm not saying that Frank threw that out there recklessly today. What Frank threw out there yesterday was bang on right. And it's something we've been saying here since like July. Because if you just looked ahead at what they had and the contracts and the players coming, you go, where are they going to fit all this? I think I wrote a story maybe right after the draft or before the draft, like, you know, even if they don't get Fantilli, it was a pipe dream then. They are absolutely drunk with forwards. Now, Imagine if Chinnikov were healthy, Olivier were healthy. Again, those aren't like banger names across the NHL, but those are guys that they think deserve to play. Where would all of this have fit? It's pretty wild. And it's weird that they haven't remedied it, but they did what they had to do on cutdown day. And we'll see if, you know, we'll see how Yurchek feels about being in Cleveland. We'll see how Bocas feels about being a healthy scratch if it goes on. Same with Johnson. That's the problem with having too much or too many people. So I hope that answers your question, Jonathan. Thanks so much for stepping in here. Sean P says, if the players live up to the writing, Elvis returns to form with improved D and the injury bug stays away, this is a 90 to 100 point team. I wish, yeah. So this paragraph, and I'm with you, Sean, those are all fair, reasonable statements. If you're a person of a certain age, you remember a song from the 1970s, maybe the early 80s, but I think it was the 70s, by a group called Bread. Look it up. It is a classically 70s song called If. And as I like to say, that's more ifs than a Bread concert, because that's a lot of things that have to fall into place. All the players are as good as you expect them to be. Elvis is awesome with a new D around him, and the injury bug goes away. Yeah, they may be a 90-point team. I don't think that's out of the question. But that's a lot of things that have to fall into place. We used to do this at training camp with Doug McLean back in the early years. He would go through all the guys from the previous year, and it would be, well, Nash had 19 goals as a rookie. He's going to have 41 this year. Whoa! Now, he was right about that one. Sanderson had 30 goals that year. I think he could have 36 because he's going to have better players with him. Well, Sanderson hurt his shoulder. I think that was the year. And I think he might have had 18 goals. So-and-so had this many points. So next year, they're just automatically going to be better. They're going to do this. Look at what we thought about Cole Sillinger after his rookie year heading into last year. Sky's the limit. 25 goals, 75 points based upon his really good rookie year. And it just doesn't, the best laid plans don't always come to pass. So all of the things that are possible could lead them to a surprising and successful season. I guess I would caution that it never plays out that way. But hey, hope springs eternal. I don't want to talk you out of anything. Nick O says, piggybacking off Mark L's comment, I'm a huge Chinnikov fan. How big of a step do you see him making this year, if at all? You know what? I feel like he became a little bit more impactful last season before he got hurt. I don't know what to expect this year. And I've been saying this for a while too. It's easy for me to look ahead with Ken Johnson and say that's a playmaking winger. He's an Alex Hemsky guy in his peak, maybe. Hemsky's peak. I can look at Fantilli and anticipate a big, combative, two-way centerman. When I look ahead at Chinnikov, I'm not quite wise enough to say that's what Chinnikov is. I'm not sure where he's going. He's a shooter. Is he a special shooter? I don't know. Maybe he is. But he's not Marchenko, a shooter. He's not Laine, a shooter. I don't know where he's going. People much smarter than me see a bright future. So I'll leave it at that.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
David L. says, just to put a bow on Vincent, I know you take your role as a beat writer versus analyst very seriously, but it felt like you were saying that not only was it better to have Vincent than a scandal-plagued coach, but that you felt Vincent was simply a better choice regardless. Is that fair? I would couch that a little bit, David. I understood the decision-making process that took the Blue Jackets to a veteran coach this year. It doesn't necessarily mean Babcock. To me, that was unnecessarily reckless. But I understood that they wanted a veteran coach after the way things went last year and how aimless it seemed here. It felt like they needed somebody who had a track record of this is how you do it and was demanding and could set that tone. I understood that thought process. So them passing over Pascal Vincent, as difficult as it must have been, at the time you go, is this the right job for another first-time NHL head coach? I could see people saying that this wasn't that right time. Now, given all that they've gone through with the previous hire, Babcock, I think this coach may be exactly what they need right now as a response to that. I want to look into this. Somebody told me that in 1950, 51 maybe, there was a coach that Ohio State wanted to hire, and they didn't want to hire this guy. I think his name was Woody. They hired the other guy, and the other guy quit a short time later. Now, knowing how things worked back then, there could have been some god-awful thing behind the scenes that forced him to quit. I don't know. Or he could have just decided he wanted a different job. Anyways, they couldn't have that coach, so they settled for this guy named Woody. And you all know how that ended up. Sometimes these plans, these things that you think you know, work out in totally different ways, and they work out pretty well ultimately, though not in the way you envisioned. I don't know how Pascal Vincent is going to do as a coach. I really don't. I know that he's a genuine person, and I really get the sense that these players want to play for him. But it would be foolish for me to say I know that this is how it's going to go. So... oh wow, Christopher B says 1971. I assume he means If by Bread. It's kind of a cool song. It's gonna be in my head all, and I forget there was some really popular soap opera at the time. These are the things we can get into on Front of Nationwide. God, Luke and Laura, was that General Hospital? I feel like If became like a recurring song for some sad ass vein in that soap opera. Not that I was watching soap operas at one year old, but let's just say they were on. Not much of a question. Is this a comment? My conspiracy theory is that Dumais practices with the team while on IR. Sillinger gets sent down to AHL before his game's requirement for waivers. So Dumais gets a cup of coffee. Then he gets loaned out for the World Juniors before going back to Juniors. unless he shows out in the NHL, like right last year. I mean, I'll listen to that. I don't believe it to be true. He missed practice today to go see a doctor. So there is something going on. I don't think they would just pull him out of practice to make it look like he's going to see a doctor. I think he's going back to junior. I'm not saying he doesn't get a couple games in here. That'd be kind of cool. Why not? Go for it. But I also, and I'm being honest here, I don't think he's one of their 12 best forwards right now. I think he's got the potential to be an NHL player for sure. Yeah. But, yeah, I would take that bet that that's not how this plays out. But we'll see. We'll see. Jonathan C. says, agree, hope you're doing well. Been praying. Thanks, Jonathan. Appreciate that. Corey and Gary. Corey and Gary. That's from Ryan R. I'm not sure where that's going. Jordan Z. says, have the players lost focus interest last season? Oh, yeah. Yeah, last season was over in November. And there were injuries. There was chronic losing. I think the players tuned out. I think the coaches, the head coach tuned out. I just think it was an all over bad scene. So Aaron P, this is not me, I swear, says, while we're being philosophical, if the team works hard, plays fast and with structure and discipline per Vincent, yet still loses a lot of games this season, will the ownership, hockey leadership, team, and fans be satisfied? No. No, because you know what? If they work hard, play fast, and play with structure and discipline, they're not going to lose a lot of games. I assume you're including the goaltender in there. After the TDL trade deadline, who would you bet to... Who'd you bet to the RD next to Werenski? Our pipeline is so exciting and hard to predict. Well, I think the sense is that Dierichek will be there eventually. Maybe, look, Damon Severson's with Provorov right now, but these aren't set either. I mean, this is part of what's so up in the air right now. Severson could very well end up next to Werenski. I don't know what you do. You could put Boakvist next to Provorov. You could put, I suppose, Peak next to Provorov. There's all sorts of stuff they could do. I'm of a mind. I know a lot of people are upset that Yurecek is in Cleveland. The one that I think is the most egregious is Blankenberg. I like that kid on the third pair with Gudbranson. I think he's the perfect Gudbranson partner. And I like him in the lineup. I want him in the lineup if I'm the coach here. So, Matthew P. was bummed to hear about Barry Melrose stepping away from coverage of the league. Any good Melrose stories or interactions you had? The first time I met Barry Melrose, I want to say was like 19, maybe 98. And the conversation was, you're old enough. I bet you had a mullet growing up too. And I did. I did not have photographic evidence of it, but I did have a Melrose mullet. It was not in honor of Barry Melrose. It was not as profound and beautiful as Barry Melrose's. But I did. And there is photographic evidence of it. Now my prom picture is amazing. But Barry Melrose was always available. A great person to talk to for stories, especially in the early days of the franchise when we were really trying to get a texture and a context of the league and what Columbus was going to have at its disposal. We used to do a thing at the Columbus Dispatch, my former employer, called The Ticket, which was sort of a weekend guide, a weekend look at what was ahead, the big events that weekend. And so every once in a while, that would turn into a Blue Jacket story. Forty, can you do a ticket story on this? It would be a big blowout on fighting, on what it's like to play in L.A., and whatever. It could be, you know, if the Blue Jackets were taking a West Coast road trip. And Barry Melrose, for stories like that, was always always available. Here's my number. Call me anytime. And certainly a great guy. I would not count him as a close friend, but the guy you always look forward to seeing national games that he was broadcasting, or whenever they did games here. Good guy, sent him a well-intended message yesterday. We got time for two quick more here. Christopher says, do you think the team gained anything at all from last season besides draft order? Well, I think there's a lot of pissed off guys in that room that hated what they went through last year. And don't want to go through it again. That's some pretty good motivation right there. And they did gain Fantilli from last year. And they did take a look at their defense and say, holy crow, we need two guys. And that was Provorov and Severson. I think they have a greater appreciation for what Zach Werenski means to this team. So nothing. What I've always said is these god-awful seasons, and they've had many of them, they cannot be endured in vain. You have to get something out of them. You blow that draft pick, you got nothing out of it. You learn nothing about how bad your defense is and how it desperately needs help. You got nothing out of it. They can't have those seasons. Chad East says, all the well wishes to you, Porty. Thank you. Thanks for that. Has there been any CBJ player reaction, or have they not been asked? And what is your reaction on the NHL explicitly banning players from using Pride tape this season? A lot of other NHLers from across the league have weighed in. You know what? I was in the room briefly today. I had to step out to do this. I'm also finishing a Fantilli story. I did not ask. I did not hear a player ask that. I don't understand it. I will say from the league's perspective, they felt like this was a good thing to do. The Pride nights that they did, the Pride tape, etc. But as of last year, it turned into them getting hit over the head because of the small number of players, an unacceptable number of players, for sure. Any number is unacceptable. But a small number who didn't want to do it, instead of being celebrated for the large number that did. And maybe this is the wrong perspective, but I remember thinking last year before the Provorov stuff became known when he was in Philadelphia, I was amazed, and maybe this is part of my cynical view of the world. I was amazed that so many players were outwardly supportive of wearing a Pride jersey, of expressing their support for LGBTQ issues. I looked at that and went, wow, I didn't think. I thought that the league had come a long way from when I first started covering it, when I don't think nearly that number of people would have been supporting it. But I don't think that that was the tenor, and maybe that's a naive position. If anyone feels against it, it's too many. I get that. We all should feel free to live the life that we choose and we're born to be. But I think from the league's perspective, they were getting hit over the head for the players that didn't support it instead of celebrated for the people who did. And they can't make people do these things. So there's really no way around that. But I don't understand saying, okay, no Pride tape. The problem was, of course, that the people weren't looking at the players who did put the Pride tape on their sticks. They were looking for the players that didn't and reading into that, perhaps unfairly. That's where I come in on it. I think that's a fairly reasoned approach. But I understand that there are different philosophies and views here. Not a good look, certainly, but I'm sure the league has their reasons for doing it because they would have thought long and hard about this. I don't support it, certainly, but it's something to keep an eye on. Thanks for being with us. Jared Bull says hello to everybody as well. He's just walking by in Nationwide Arena this morning, assistant coach Jared Bull. I hope you guys enjoy the opener tomorrow night. It should be. It's always fun. The opener is always fun. Adam Fantilli taking the rookie lap before warm-ups, making his NHL debut. Got a lot to celebrate and a lot to look at. If you're watching from the rink, if you're watching from home, I hope you enjoy yourselves. Thanks for being with us. It's been a pleasure. We'll talk again next week, and talk to you soon. Take care.